The Solar Panel, a weekly Suns podcast, part of the Almighty Baller Podcast Network. We are PHX.
So on Hoops Hype, everyone's gearing up. Not everyone, but you know, the majority of fan bases out there, they are gearing up for what is going to be an exciting offseason. The offseason is one of my favorite parts of the NBA season, actually. I think it's so exciting. It's sort of like fantasy basketball where you're thinking to yourself, what could happen with my team? What can they do? What moves can they make and how will this impact it? Well, there's a few different free agents for the Phoenix Suns, and this was something I wasn't aware of, but Dave brought this up that he was on, what was it, Hoops Hype or Hoops Habit?
Hoops Hype.
Hoops Hype. And Alex Len is the 73rd ranked free agent this summer.
That's right. Yep. He's sandwiched right in between Darren Collison at number 72 and Ramon Sessions at number 74. And for Suns fans, Alex Len is ranked only two ahead of unrestricted free agent Michael Beasley.
Oh, God. But somehow he'll still get $15 million a year. It'll happen inevitably. One GM in this league will go, hey, 7-footer with potential. I'm gonna overpay for that because it's always a smart idea.
Well, you know, it is interesting. Alan Williams is only ranked a few lower than Alex Len. I wonder, Alex Len profiles physically perfectly for the center or even backup center position, whereas Alan Williams is a little undersized. I'm very curious if they will get roughly the same money this summer or not. We've all expected Alex Len would get, you know, 15 to 20 million a year because of how last summer went. But I'd be curious to see exactly how it's going to turn out with these guys. I personally am ready to move on from the Len experiment as long as the Suns bring in maybe that veteran center you were talking about, Greg. But
I saw that was another list that's out there. I think it was FanSided and Sports Illustrated tweeted out. It was the five things the Suns needed this offseason, and number one was a veteran center, and that was the second I closed the browser window. No, that is not what they need. They have it. It's called Tyson Chandler, and that's more than enough.
Wait, so you didn't read the rest of it?
No. When if you've seen that misinformed in step one of your piece, I don't need to read four other steps that I'm not going to agree with.
Were they all on separate pages though? Because that's what they do now, where they put one thing on one page and yes, you have to click to the next page, and that it increases your click through or whatever. I can't stand it either.
That was what it was, and I wasn't going to give them any more page views, just simply out of protest.
So back to this free agent list, there is a good thing. That 2013 draft turned out to be pretty bad, as we all know, with Alex Len in there, picked number five. Pick number six, or was it seven, Ben McLemore? I think he went right behind Len.
He went seven. Nerlens Noel was six right after.
Okay, I knew the two of them were right after. McLemore is ranked 82nd on this free agent list.
See, I kind of don't agree with that, though.
He might be a little bit lower.
Is Anthony Bennett the worst number one pick of all time?
Michael Olowokandi is raising his hand right now, but I think Bennett is laughing back at Olowokandi. Yes, probably.
And they're all laughing at us because they're multi-millionaires who are sucking at their job.
I mean, we went into the wrong industry, gentlemen.
Yes. Gerald Green is 88th. Another former Sun who has one good game in the playoffs, and all of a sudden people are saying the Suns' former backcourt is dominating the playoffs. You know, we see these titles, but he did have a very good game and played well with Isaiah Thomas, so good for them.
Can we talk really briefly about Gerald Green and how astonishing it was, at least to me, that he was going to make such an impact in the postseason? I mean, I didn't guess this at his point in his career. I thought initially when he left the Suns that he would be a difference maker, at least in a couple of regular season games, but I had no idea he was going to be able to turn a series around the way he did.
It doesn't surprise me. He was a guy that, you know, would have these unbelievable hot streaks and then disappear for weeks at a time, sometimes literally, like he did in Miami. But I think that it isn't a total shock because he's a heat check guy and he came in and he had a great game, but I don't think he's going to have a huge impact on round two and be the difference maker versus the Wizards. I think maybe he'll have a hot 10-minute streak in it, but he's not a guy that's a full-time impact guy.
No, he's really not. He's perfect coming off the bench, and if he's hot and if you're a coach who can see it before it happens or as it's happening, you can also see when he's getting lucky and you should just take him out anyway. If you're good at that, then Gerald Green can make a big difference when he's on the court, and he just won't be on the court a lot. But if you limit it to, if he makes his first couple, then leave him out for 30 minutes, you're going to be disappointed more often than not. I thought Gerald Green was a fun player when he played for the Suns, and he's got a nice game. He just doesn't always use his head and doesn't always do a whole lot of other positive things on the court when he's out there besides shooting. So when we're talking about major impact in the first round, Gerald Green did start 4 games for the Celtics out of 5 that he appeared in, and he averaged 9 points in those games. He made 39% of his threes. So he definitely made a huge impact in that first round. We'll see how much impact he makes in the next round. I'm pulling for him. He's a little nutty as a person, and all you got to do is look at his hair first. That's his latest representation of himself. But when he's hot, he's fun to watch.
We are PHX.
And you're listening to the Solar Panel, a Phoenix Suns show, part of Almighty Baller Radio. You can follow us on Twitter and on Facebook at Suns Solar Panel. You can follow Dave King individually, the managing editor for Bright Side of the Sun at Dave King NBA. You can follow Greg Espo, former Post Suns game radio host and columnist currently of Sports 360 AZ at Espo. And you can follow myself, Tim Tompkins, at Radio Tim NBA. So something that we officially launched, gentlemen, and I'm really excited about it. Shout out to NJET's butt. We now have a merch store.
I'm excited till we get sued. But other than that, I'm excited because there's a lot of great fun t-shirts on there that I think you'll enjoy. My favorite one right now is the Dragon Bender shirt. Go check it out. I posted it on Twitter, but I'm really excited for that one.
Yeah, there's some fun ones. So there's that one right there. There's a Training Staff Mafia one. There's the McDonough's 29 other GMs served up every draft day. There's a Solar Panel one. And you can get this stuff in coffee mugs. You can get posters. You can get shirts. You can get hoodies. You can get the baseball tee. I don't know. I'm really excited about it. There's also a few Devin Booker, like 70-point game shirts. There's one with Marquise Chris shaking hands with Dragan Bender. It's a bunch of cool stuff. So just go to sunsshow.com and the link is right at the top of the page. And each week we like to give you guys a shout out for giving us a shout out by leaving us a review on iTunes. This week we have one from...
Our review this week is from Rachel the Pianist. Glad I said that right because that could have sounded horribly awful if I mispronounced that. Rachel the Pianist says, A+. I don't always listen to podcasts, but when I do, I listen to the Solar Panel. My husband and I are huge fans, and this is hands down the best podcast for Sun supporters out there. So, Rachel, thank you very much for your review. 5 stars on iTunes. We appreciate it. And as always, the prize closet is still open. If you guys leave a review on iTunes, subscribe to the show, take a screenshot and tweet it to myself at Espo and at Sun Solar Panel, I will give you a Suns prize right out of my prize closet.
So this proves that we have at least one female listener.
Yeah, but it sounds like her husband may have forced her to listen. So, you know, I don't
and,
know.
And she's counts. The one who writes reviews on the internet. That's kind of like my relationship too.
So the big question this week. TJ Warren, we saw almost a full season going into his third year with the Phoenix Suns. Started 59 games. He did bring up a scoring average pretty respectably. He started off the season really hot. He had that mysterious head injury midway through the season. I think he closed the season really strong, especially upping rebounding percentage there, which I know is really important to Dave. So I guess I'll start this off with you, Dave. What does TJ Warren need to do to show that he is part of the Suns' future moving forward?
It's really interesting. Brendan Kleen, one of the contributors for Brightside, as well as other SB Nation sites, wrote a review of TJ Warren's season last week on Brightside, wherein he said that TJ's trying to excel in a league that he no longer fits in, basically was the bottom line, because he's such a mid-range game guy and he doesn't take three-pointers on enough of a frequency, and he doesn't play high-level defense to offset that as well. And basically the conclusion of the article was, best of luck to him trying to make it in an NBA that he doesn't really fit in anymore. And Warren initially replied to that with an LOL on Twitter. And then he later took that down and just made a standalone tweet that says, I'm not proving anything to anyone but myself. I think Warren is a really, really good young player. I think he's got a long 10, 12, 15-year NBA career that's going to be on his resume before he's done. But I do think his rebounding, upping his rebounding percentages last spring really are going to help him with his NBA career, because you've got to be at least two-dimensional, if not three or four-dimensional, in the NBA to really keep a strong role out there. So he can score on his own. He can create his own shot. And he can rebound effectively as a small forward or a part-time power forward. So those are really good things. But I think if TJ really wants to make a sixth-man, seventh-man career or a starter career in the NBA, I do have to agree with Brendan that he's going to have to develop a three-point shot that's at least consistent. Now, we're not talking league average or above league average here. He just needs to be able to make 33-35% like PJ Tucker did, so that when he runs to the corner on a fast break trying to spread the floor, that a defender has to go with him. Or when he slides to a corner on a flare or something like that, on some action on offense, that a defender feels like he has to go with him. And as long as TJ can do that, then he opens up the rest of the floor for himself and his teammates, and he'll be better off for a long-term career. But I do think he has steps to make to become that, but I think he's someone who can actually take those steps and prove to everybody that he is a long-term viable starting candidate for the NBA.
Look, I think his game is old school, but the difference between him being obsolete and him being effective, I mean, if he can make those mid-range jumpers, I don't think he's obsolete in this league. It's guys that take those shots and don't hit them consistently that the guys are that are obsolete in this game. I actually think, with everybody focusing so much on three-pointers and everything, a guy that can hit those mid-range jumpers consistently is somebody that could surprise in this league, because most people aren't expecting those shots anymore. Now, I agree with you, Dave. He's got to get better at his three-point percentage. But I think the key for TJ Warren to have a successful career is simple: stay healthy. And he hasn't the last few years. And if he can, I think you're going to see a guy who really develops into his own. He's a hard worker, good guy, and has an inherent ability to score the basketball. It's unbelievable the way this guy has a nose for it. There's a reason they called him Tony Buckets in college. It's because he just, when he has the basketball, he finds a way to score no matter where he is on the floor outside of standing beyond the three-point line. So I think if he does develop that three-point game a little bit more, he'll be a full, complete player. But I think he has a very good career. I likely think it's as the scoring option on a second unit for a good team. And I hope that if he's with the Suns, that's where he lands, because having Booker and Warren on the floor in your starting lineup gives you some problems defensively. But I think this kid has a bright future in this league. I just don't know that it'll be in Phoenix, especially if Josh Jackson becomes your draft pick in this draft. Warren becomes the expendable guy, but it is an intriguing option to deal to get some pieces back.
I mean, to that point, though, with the three-pointers, DeMar DeRozan has been able to find himself a really long, lengthy, lucrative, and productive career without being able to hit threes.
That's absolutely true. So you can be that, and I I'm not a big fan of these kind of nicknames, but I'm going to use it anyway. You can be that kind of unicorn where you're the one of a kind that who can do this thing that everyone else wishes they could and get away with, which is taking mid-range shots, because that's what's open on the floor more often now that teams are defending the three-point line, excluding the Suns. And I think that a guy like DeMar DeRozan is really excelling and showing you can win with a mid-range game. So absolutely, T.J. Warren could follow in those footsteps and become one of those indispensable guys who leads his team deep in the playoffs. I totally see that. It would just be easier for him and more likely for him if he can be taking two or three threes a game and making 33-35% of them.
And to your point on the unicorn nickname, could you imagine if any of these guys back in the 70s or 80s were called unicorns? They probably would have kicked the reporter's ass who called them that. It wouldn't have been good.
Talking about his free throw rate. He has increased his free throw rate every season since being in the league, starting it out off with a 0.089 last season, 0.145 this year, 0.189. So, I mean, he's getting to the free throw line on almost 20% of his possessions. Part of what makes James Harden and DeMar DeRozan, I guess we should use a DeMar DeRozan comparison, is that DeMar DeRozan's getting to the line 8 or 9 different times a game. So even if he can't hit the three, he's doing a couple of things. He's putting the other team into foul trouble. And he's also, it raises his true shooting percentage because he's getting to the free throw line so often. T.J. Warren at almost 20% right now, how much of a growth does he need to have in that category and able to make him as effective of a player as he truly can be?
Well, the difference with a DeMar DeRozan is he's one of the focal points of their offense. So he's getting to the line a lot because he has the ball more than T.J. Warren is going to have. But I agree, T.J.'s got to get to the free throw line to be more effective long term, especially if he's going to be a major option in an offense.
Taking a look at TJ's defense, and I specifically want to ask you guys, because I can watch on TV, but you both of you are at virtually every single game, so you can see up close and up personal. Talking about his defensive box plus minus, this was definitely his best year for defensive box plus minus of his 3-year career with the Suns. Still a negative, negative 0.5. Not a huge fan of defensive box plus minus as a metric, because a lot of that has to do with the defensive rebounding and things like that. Which is important, but it doesn't necessarily tell the whole story. What did you guys see from T.J. Warren on the defensive end this season specifically?
Well, first, I need Rosetta Stone to understand exactly what you're talking about when we go deep analytics here. But the eye test for me when it comes to T.J. Warren and defense is he's a guy that tries very hard on the defensive end, and he showed improvements this season. Whether the numbers fully vet that is debatable, but I definitely think you saw an improvement, especially before his mysterious head injury that on the defensive end.
Yeah, we definitely saw some improvement on his on-ball defense when he was taking the guy one-on-one. Earl Watson singled out TJ as a guy who could defend the other team's better big wing player. TJ had a couple of good games, or at least good sequences in some early games, where he showed he could stay in front of a guy if he really was focused in. The problem with TJ that he's going to have, like 95% of NBA players, is that he doesn't either have the length or the lateral quickness to keep a guy from juking him enough to get past and get all the way to the line. So I think TJ has improved as a defender. I think he's going to continue to improve using his feet, setting. It's all about early positioning. If you can't change direction on a dime and stretch your arms out 7 feet, 7'5" wide, then you're going to need to be in better position to start with. It's just like defense in baseball. So you've got to start out better, and he'll get better at that if he focuses on it in his career for sure.
What did you see of his pick and roll defense and also his off ball defense?
I can't really comment on that. I don't watch the games like a scout. So I end up doing a lot of ball watching, like most fans do, when I'm trying to keep up with the games as I'm taking notes as the game is going on. So I don't know if Greg's picked up on more of that, but basically the Suns' overall defense on off-ball defense is awful. And some of that's TJ and some of that's his teammates.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on it because I'm just a loud mouth that shouts things about the game. I don't. I'm like Dave. I watch the ball. I don't. I'm not necessarily watching every player's individual off-ball defense.
Yeah, the player that and I hate to do this because everyone's such, including me, such a Devin Booker fan, but the only one's off-ball defense that really stands out to me is Devin, because he'll completely turn his back on his player that's standing out on the wing doing nothing while he's watching the ball being driven in. So he's kind of like us watching the ball on defense. And then he gets himself burned on backdoor cuts constantly. I don't think TJ is quite that bad. I think TJ's made some progress. It helps being in your third year versus your second year. But I think everybody on the team needs to get better in that area.
Well, to be fair to Devin, when you're 95% of the offense, you got to rest somewhere. So I guess it's on the defensive end of the court.
Does TJ
even Tyler Ulis was joking about it at one point late in the season that the Suns had one or two good games on defense, and Tyler said, "Yeah, man, this is we've been working really hard. Even Devin's playing a little defense."
I think Devin Booker has been an improved defensive player this year, at least on ball. And so that was sort of the argument people would have with James Harden. They're like, look, James Harden's a terrible off-ball defender, but on ball, he's not the worst defender in the world. So that might be a little bit of where, Devin Booker's going to have to prove his defensive abilities. But sticking with TJ Warren, does his future solely depend on where the Suns fall in the draft lottery this year?
Future with the Suns? Yeah, yes. Would think so, because if you wind up with Josh Jackson, you're going to have a redundancy there. And I don't think you're really, and Jackson is a much better player than a two-way player than TJ is. So, yeah, I think his future with the Suns depends on where they land in the lottery and if Jackson's the guy that you're going to take. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing for him, because if he winds up leaving Phoenix, he's going to get a fresh start somewhere else, and he'll probably get a good opportunity there as well.
I have a little bit different take on it. I think, TJ, if the Suns take Josh Jackson, I think TJ actually does have a future with the Suns, as long as they both roll into the player that we think they each can be. Josh Jackson can be the do-all, do-everything type, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, a lot of defense, and a lot of hustle out there, and he's 6'8", with a 6'10", 6'11", wingspan. TJ is a little bit smaller, but he's thicker in the chest and all that, and I think TJ actually played some stretch four this year, and that's part of the reason his rebounding numbers went up. So I do actually think you could have those two in the same rotation and be very successful. And TJ will have to be your scorer, where Josh Jackson picks up all the other slack. Now, where I think TJ's days would be numbered is if the Suns take a Jason Tatum, who is not exactly the same profile player as TJ, but fits the same role as TJ would. So I think if you see the Suns take Tatum, then TJ's future is done. Where I think any small forward being taken in the draft is impactful on the roster more so than TJ Warren, is if you take Josh Jackson and you keep TJ Warren, then Derek Jones Jr.'s future is a little bit cloudy. And even Dragan Bender's future is a little bit cloudier with the Suns, because he's going to be going all along that front line. And if you keep TJ and the drafted small forward, then there's less minutes across the front line for the guys who are down there, like a Dragan and a Derek. So it all depends. It's the same thing with Bledsoe in the point guard. But I think to a lesser extent, you might be able to keep TJ around.
I agree with you on TJ, but my assumption is that Dragan Bender is a bigger part of your future. So if you wind up in that TJ would be the odd man out rather than Dragan, because you invest the number four pick last season in Dragan, and I just can't see you giving up on that after what he played, 15 games this season and due to injury. So I think TJ is the guy you probably give up on before you give up on Dragan. Unless you move one of them. The thing is, this roster, and we've talked about this, you don't know really what it is yet. There's guys that you don't know what their position long term is. Is Dragan a three? Is he a four? Does Does he wind up maybe playing a stretch at five? Like, there's a lot of guys on this roster where you don't quite know where it is, but I don't see Dragan being the odd man out here.
Part of this has to do with contracts coming up at the same time, right? So you have Dragan Bender, you're going to have Marquise Chris, you're going to have Tyler Ulis, three players who the Suns in the same year are going to have to make decisions on contracts with. So, you know, to a certain extent, do they try and get themselves out of that situation by moving one of those guys before then?
Well, I wasn't really talking about this, whether you give up or not on a Dragan Bender or a Derrick Jones Jr. What I really meant was in this upcoming season, where TJ Warren is heading into his restricted free agency next summer, and those other guys are not going to hit restricted free agency for two more years, I think you're going to have a tougher time to find Dragan Bender and Derrick Jones Jr. minutes if you draft a small forward. That's the only point I was making. I don't think you need to move on from TJ right away. However, your point is really good, Tim, that do you really want to force Bender and Chris to find playing time on a crowded roster to prove they can play together long term as they approach restricted free agency together in a couple of years? Actually, they have three more years until they each hit restricted free agency, but two more before they can be signed to extensions. So I think at some point the Suns are going to have to clear the decks a little bit to give them a lot of playing time to see if they can play together. Case in point is the 76ers this past season. Because of injuries and stuff, they weren't able to see if Embiid and Noel could play together and share the same front court and Jahlil Okafor as well, all because of injuries. And so they were forced to make a decision at the trade deadline this year to give up on Nerlens Noel and trade him to Dallas for almost less than the Suns got for P.J. Tucker, which is almost nothing. Really, Dallas doesn't even have to give up a first rounder to have Nerlens Noel with his bird rights, basically, because they'll have to re-sign him to a big contract and hope he stays healthy. But that's the thing, is the Sixers were never able to figure it out because of injuries and roster stuff and all that. And I hope the Suns don't find themselves in that position in 2 years.
Are you interested in some really creative t-shirt designs that show your love of the Phoenix Suns as well as your support of the Solar Panel at Phoenix Suns Podcast? Go to sunsatpodcast.com and check out all of our gear. The link's at the top of the page where you can pick yourself up some Suns Solar Panel merch. Again, just go to sunspodcast.com. So the NBA is doing in late June NBA Player Awards, and two Suns players are up for awards. And new categories, and it's all fan voting. Tyler Ulis and Devin Booker. I have it pulled up right here. One is for Game Winner of the Year, and that is between Kyrie Irving versus Golden State, Oklahoma City's Russell Westbrook versus Denver. Tyler Ulis is his shot, his game winner against Boston. The other category is Top Performers of the Year, where you have Devin Booker, his 70-point game, James Harden with that 53-16 and 17 triple-double. Klay Thompson scored 60 points in three quarters against Indiana. He didn't play in the fourth. And Russell Westbrook with the most points in a triple-double at 57-13-11. Taking a look at which one of these guys deserve Performance of the Year, I'm going with Devin Booker on that because I think what he did was absolutely outstanding. That being said, for the Game Winner of the Year, I am not in Tyler Ulis's camp.
106-104 Celtics. 10 seconds to go in the fourth.
You don't need a three,
right? Bledsoe puts it up and ties it up with 4 seconds to go. Thomas loses the ball. A chance to win.
When it comes to this, I think that Russell Westbrook's triple-double, where he also got the game winner against Denver, was a bit more of an impressive game winner.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. Neither of these guys stand a chance, because when you're on the second worst team in the NBA, you're not really going to win any postseason award, especially when it comes to a fan vote. But Devin Booker's performance was the best of the year, when only six other human beings ever have done what you did. You deserve the top performance of that year, but you're completely right. Game winner, it had to be that Russell Westbrook shot against Denver. That was insanity.
Yeah, I'm in favor of that. And in fact, I'd even have put Devin Booker's game winner over Dallas in one of their last wins of the season as a better game winner for the Suns than Ulysses against the Celtics. So it might be because the Celtics are more national and people are remembering that better, and it was such a crazy play. But I think Devin Booker creating his own game winner in that win over Dallas was even more impactful, in my opinion. So
he's got to go here and just get a good look. Booker got it at the buzzer. Devin Booker has done it again.
No, I don't think Ulysses should win the game winner of the year. I agree with you that Russell Westbrook's game winner is probably of these three going to be the best. As far as performance of the year, look, it's just tough because Devin Booker's 70-point game is obviously one of the single best achievements in the past dozen years in the NBA. But nobody scores 70 points. They just don't. And that's something you've got to remember. They just don't. Mm-hmm. That's something you just got to remember and will always be in the record books. However, I think people have put a lot of taint on that 70-point game and the fact that he was on the second worst team in the NBA and the fact that it was against an opponent that was just riding out the fourth quarter for him, because I can't remember exactly how many points he scored in the fourth, but he was only in the 40s at the end of the third. So, and the Celtics had a 20-point lead. So I don't think Devin Booker will win a fan vote on that 70-point game. I think it'd be more like Russell Westbrook's 57 plus 13 and 11, or James Harden. I don't know if James Harden would get this. I don't think he's got quite enough people in his corner. I'll bet it's Westbrook who wins this thing on the performance of the year.
Talking about the Morris twins' performance of the year, they're going to have their performance of the year. It looks like their court date is coming up.
I think
we need to get fans out there to show our support for the Morris twins in the form of booing them and angry signs. I think we should show them a good Phoenix welcome when they come back for their court date.
Yeah, they love the Phoenix fans so much that definitely it would be fun to get out there and do that. But I just don't see it happening. They'll probably get their court date moved again. So this thing is years in the making, and that's the way the legal system is. But they are eventually going to get a court date, and we'll see what happens on a conviction on this. But I always knew it was going to take a long time, and I was warned by others that this was going to take a long time to come to fruition to get these guys through the court system.
And it's such a bizarre story. If you're them, you've got all this money. How do you not settle this thing? How do you not just go, here's a lump sum, and let's just make this go away? Like everybody else that's rich does in this system.
Yeah, I don't know how they haven't settled it either. I think for them, it's a point of principle, and I think they are disconnected from reality enough that they think just by being belligerent they can win. And so I think that was that's my guess on why there wasn't a settlement, because we all expected it to just disappear and go away. What's the weirdest part about it to me is that it was this little incident was sandwiched in between a pair of big Suns games. They had played on that Friday night. They allegedly fought on Saturday night at a high school basketball gym. And then on Sunday they played again. And it's just the weirdest thing that you would spend your off day doing that.
Well, and they allegedly fought a guy that they claimed they didn't know, that then turned into a guy that may or may not have been dating their father or their mother that they've known for years, that was supposedly some kind of mentor. It's just, the whole thing is just bizarre, and I am so glad that it's no longer a Phoenix problem.
I'm sure you are not the only one. What also isn't a Phoenix problem anymore is getting to love PJ Tucker for all of his defensive abilities. He is heading into what might be the greatest moment in his NBA career so far, as he heads to Cleveland to guard LeBron James in the semi-conference finals of the Eastern Conference.
Well, I really can't wait to see PJ Tucker out there. He loves guarding those kind of guys. He's a great one-on-one defender. He can handle LeBron James's strength. He just can't handle his length and height and speed. But I am interested, and I think what we'll probably see is LeBron still approach triple doubles in the series, but there will be moments of frustration that PJ will express over LeBron being able to do that, and moments of frustration of LeBron getting shut down occasionally by PJ in ways that only a PJ Tucker can. So I am looking forward to this. I think it could be really fun. And I do still think that Cleveland will win out, and it'll end up being the Warriors and the Cavaliers.
Well, this was the moment that we always dreamed of for PJ Tucker. I imagine it's like, and Dave, you may be able to speak to this since you're really old, but I imagine it's like when your child finally is out on their own in the world, and you get to see that moment where they prove to everybody their potential. Like, PJ was here with us, and most people didn't get to see him, didn't get to appreciate him. Now he's going to be on one of the biggest stages guarding LeBron James. And I just, for this guy, I am so excited, and I can't wait to see what he's able to show out there. And hopefully this helps him make a lot of money in free agency this year, because one of my favorite guys that worked really hard and just gets under people's skin on the defensive end. It'll be fun to watch what he's able to do to the King in this series.
I was a little bit surprised. So he spent a good amount of time on Giannis Antetokounmpo in the Bucks series, but I think he spent more time on Chris Middleton. So they had PJ Tucker essentially shutting down the second option on the Bucks, and I do wonder how much they're going to use PJ Tucker in sort of a similar role, depending on how the Raptors approach this. You know, do we let LeBron James feast but shut down everybody else, and what kind of, or do we try and shut down LeBron James and have PJ Tucker guard him the whole time? So I think that'll be a bit interesting too. And I honestly wouldn't be surprised if we saw PJ Tucker spending a bit of time on Kevin Love.
Well, that'll be a waste of his time, because he'll just be standing in the corner, right, for the most part with Kevin Love.
They run a little bit of elbow action for him.
You've also got Damari Carroll, I believe, on the Raptors, who can play a similar style of physical defense, although not as spirited and not as engaging as PJ's. So there will be some rotations going on. I am curious how that's going to work out. But if you want to utilize the best of PJ Tucker, you're just going to throw him on LeBron, and then let's figure out the 4-on-4 outside of that.
I also wouldn't be surprised if you had a PJ Tucker guarding Kyrie Irving for different stretches of the game as well.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. I mean, that's the nice thing with PJ. He's versatile enough on the defensive end that it depending on the game and who's got the hot hand, he can help shut him down. I'm excited that on a national stage, people are going to be able to see what we got to learn and love about PJ over a long period of time.
So we interrupt this great podcast that you're listening to. My name is Kevin Rafuse.
I'm Tim Tompkins.
And I'm Justin Kuzart.
And we host the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
We cover every team in the league and a bunch of really fun segments like Random NBA Player, Drive and Dougal, and Hot Takes from Reddit.
So when you're done listening to this podcast, give us a search on iTunes or whatever podcast streaming app you're listening on.
We're also at driveanddishpodcast.com. We are the Drive and Dish NBA podcast.
Mailbag. And heading into this mailbag section, Espo, so what we've been doing is we have been going on to Reddit and posting something every single week, and you specifically have been doing this, asking for mailbag questions. But I want to get people to start hitting us up with their mailbag questions on Facebook, because I feel like by going to our Facebook page and commenting there, because we post every single Friday, something calling for mailbag questions, that is definitely the best way to get a hold of us.
Well, don't lie. You just want to circumvent the good people at Reddit. You just don't want to be around them anymore. I know how this works.
People are a little bit friendlier on Facebook. So here's the deal. I think that what we should do for the next couple of weeks is we will answer every single question on Facebook and not every single question on Reddit. Therefore, encouraging people to ask us on our Facebook instead.
How about I sweeten the deal? We've got the deal with the reviews. I opened the big bad prize closet for that. But I'm going to go big here. I've got a Jason Richardson autographed Orange Suns jersey in the prize closet. If we can up our followers on Facebook to, let's say 300. It's an extra 100. So you get out there and you help champion our Facebook page, and you ask questions in our mailbag. By the end of May, I will pick one lucky listener that will get the Jason Richardson autographed authentic Orange Suns jersey. How about we sweeten it? Because basically my wife's telling me, clean out the damn closet. I need space. So I'm gonna get this prize closet moving a little faster. Does that sound good to you, Tim?
That sounds good. So that's where all this is coming from. Your wife says, hey, I want more space to put all the shoes that Espo's buying me.
Well, no, literally, and this is in my home studio. Literally, it is jam-packed with stuff that didn't fit in the room that's jam-packed with stuff that sports memorabilia. Literally, I'm sitting in a room with every piece of memorabilia since I was a kid, from the Suns primarily, some from the Diamondbacks, and an NBA Jam arcade system, and two mannequins with full Suns authentic uniforms on them. So my wife is basically looking at me like, why do you need any of this stuff? So I'm going to empty the prize closet at least.
Who's your go-to NBA Jam team?
I'm a sucker for the Barkley Suns NBA Jam team. Because I found if you take Barkley to that far corner, I was playing analytics brand of basketball long before it was popular. I would take Barkley to that short corner. I'd run him all the way to it and quickly kind of slide back. You lose the defender. He shoots it. It's the most efficient shot in NBA Jam, and Barkley was always great at it. So I'm the Suns, but that shouldn't be a surprise to anybody there.
I just learned recently, so if you have NBA Jam on your PlayStation 4, your Xbox, or whatever, you can play online. So I have been playing online NBA Jam. I've been doing that instead of NBA 2K, which, by the way, do you play NBA 2K17?
Not 17. I haven't played since 16. When you have a newborn, video games are a thing of the past. So
yeah, I mean, that's valid. But hey, I guess we should get to these mailbag questions.
I gotta ask you. Yep. You play new NBA Jam? I'm talking classic NBA Jam. I don't play the new one because they haven't updated the roster in forever, and I can't stomach playing with Steve Nash and the bunch of guys. It was his final season, I'm pretty sure. So it was a bunch of Yahoos with him there. So
well, the one that I have is actually Steve Nash on the Lakers with Dwight Howard.
Oh, okay. So they did update it. So you must have the Goran, Eric Bledsoe Suns then.
No, I don't believe that's who is it. I think it's not Channing Frye, because Channing Frye was gone that year. But it might be Michael Beasley on the Suns, if I remember correctly.
Oh man. That's terrible. Let's get to the mailbag questions after hearing that.
Prob25 on Reddit asks, what kind of ceiling does Marquese Chris have, and is there a player he's comparable to, and what numbers do you see him putting up at his peak?
Well, I think multiple-time All-Star is his ceiling. I mean, this guy is an athletic freak. We've seen it in his rookie year. I think he exceeded expectations. Now, he was put in a position where he probably played a lot more than anybody expected. I don't think anybody thought he was going to be a starter as soon as he was, but I genuinely feel like he exceeded the expectations of what everybody had for him at such a young age. The problem with him is I think his ceiling is high, but I also think his floor is pretty low. He's a guy that I think it could all go pretty wrong for pretty easily as well, because when you rely so heavily on athleticism, one injury and your entire game changes, and then you're not that good anymore. I think Amari is probably a ceiling. If you're going to make me peg him to a player, I think he's Amari with a slightly better feel on the defensive end is probably what his ceiling is.
So Marquese Chris this season shooting 32% from behind the three-point arc per 36 numbers, put him at a 15-7 player. To me, he reminds me a little bit more of a Thad Young with a three-point shot. I envision him being an 18-8 type player through the majority of his career, but able to average a couple of different blocks. Kind of an undersized power forward that's not really grabbing quite enough rebounds as you want, but comes in for those weak side blocks.
Yeah, I can see that for sure. I I think my Amari bias is for obvious reasons, and I really hope that's where he gets to, because that's the kind of dynamic player that you, if you put with a Devin Booker and you know, I'm keeping my fingers crossed that it's a Fultz from this draft, you've got something special going on, but we'll see how it goes.
I mean, I can tell you, as far as the Fultz things go, there is zero chance that the Suns are going to be able to ever be successful with a Markelle Fultz, a Devin Booker backcourt with a TJ Warren on the wing. I mean, that is a saloon door in the making right there. And they're going to end up with a Portland Trailblazers-esque ceiling.
I don't disagree with you in that, but that's where I don't think TJ Warren is probably a long-term part of this plan. It's just a feeling I've had. I think he's a guy that becomes a piece that you deal in. I think we've talked about that on the show before, but I agree with you. At some point, you've got to think defense, and you've got to figure out, yeah, it's great to have all this offensive firepower, but if we, you know, we've got a defense that can't stop anybody, well, we've just repeated the mistakes of Suns past, because that's always been the biggest deficiency when these Suns, great Suns teams happen, is a lot of offensive firepower can't stop anybody. Well, that's great. You wind up with zero championships in 49 years.
Scooper 1030 on Reddit asks, do you have any thoughts on the ESPN layoffs going on at the moment and the changing sports media landscape in general?
I have plenty of thoughts, and I think it's BS, quite frankly. And it's because a media company sits there and tries to protect its heritage business, in this case, television and cable television subscriptions, rather than evolving. We saw the newspaper business do it, and we saw plenty of great people lose their jobs in that industry. Radio is on the brink of it, and you're seeing it happen with cable television. Cord cutting is happening. It's a reality. It's going to continue to happen, and networks like ESPN are going to lose subscribers. Well, ESPN made a heavy bet on paying billions of dollars for live sports rights, okay? And in that calculation, they didn't think what happens when the bubble bursts. When the bottom drops out of this thing, what happens? And that what happens is great people lose their job. The upper echelon of executives there sit pretty and collect their bonuses, and Screamin' A. Smith and the talking heads that are willing to yell at each other constantly for 8 hours a day get to keep their jobs. You saw the whole True Hoop Network basically blown out over at ESPN. Henry Abbott is one of the pioneers of what we do, not only this, but in blogging in general and covering the NBA on the internet. It's a sad day, but I think all these people probably land on their feet and in a much better position moving forward, seeing as they'll be prepared. They'll probably be working for companies prepared for what the legitimate future of media is. And the other factor in this, in particular with the NBA coverage and seeing a guy like a Mark Stein and other people get the axe there at ESPN, is that Adrian Wojnarowski is likely coming over to ESPN. So as part of this cost cutting, they hide cuts in their NBA section so they can then pay Woj big money to come over and basically bring the vertical over to ESPN. It frustrated and upset me, because a lot of good people are now looking for jobs because ESPN executives didn't have the foresight to figure out how do we build this for long-term success rather than trying to protect what had quote-unquote always worked.
To me, it's sort of a culmination of what you're talking about, where people not modernizing, where you have a lot of old guys making decisions on what new young people are doing. And to your point, Espo, the talking heads is sort of the amount of analysis or the type of analysis that they decided to move forward with. If you listen to ESPN radio, for example, and you're trying to get your NBA coverage, is that you are going to get nothing more than what a casual fan already knows, where they are all only talking about LeBron James and Kyrie Irving and Stephen Curry. And so what you're essentially giving people is this, you're trying to, ESPN is trying to appeal to the largest audience possible. Somebody that doesn't really follow the NBA but only knows a couple of names, and can tune in and understand what they're talking about. And I think that the advent of podcasts and the advent of blogging to a certain extent and those kinds of things is that has given us more of a niche market when it comes to analysis of the sport. And so what you have is you have a lot of NBA fans, for example, that are listening to the Solar Panel right now. And why are they listening to the Solar Panel instead of ESPN? They're listening to us because we're niche and we're providing what they want for content, which means that you have one less person, whoever you are listening to the Solar Panel right now, you're one less person that's tuned in to ESPN because you're listening to us. And so you have advertisers that are putting their dollars in more places. They're putting their advertising dollars on the web. They're putting it in podcasts. They're still putting it radio and they're still putting it in TV. They're putting it on YouTube ads. And so you have the same pie of advertising money, but it's going to eight different places. And ESPN failed to capitalize, in my opinion, on the new media, the on-demand aspect of how we consume media, whether, to your point, Espo is cord cutting with NBA League Pass and Netflix and that kind of thing, or whether or not it's listening to podcasts instead of radio.
Well, and there's another thing going on here where the power is starting to shift to the content creator, because no longer is the ceiling to entry into this stuff very high. You now can have a $100 microphone, a internet connection, and Skype, and you can do what it cost them millions and millions to do to build the infrastructure in terms of audio content like we are, or even video content. It's just changed so dramatically that now it's not about who owns the signal or who owns the channel or the studio space. It's about who's the most creative and who can give people the content that they want.
Sai Mirage on Reddit asks, what do we do for a center? Do we tank next season and try and nab one of those centers in the 2018 draft? Or do we go after a young center like Andre Drummond and sacrifice some picks and maybe a player or two to get him?
God, I hope the Suns don't tank again. I don't think I could take another season of basketball where the point was losing. The center position is changing so dramatically that the question is, do you need a conventional center? Does it work in today's offense? Do we have the center of the future on the roster in Phoenix in a Dragan Bender or a Marquise Chris? There's a lot of questions that need to be answered, and I don't think they get answered this offseason. I think this is a see what you have, understand your roster, and then make a move in next free agency or next year's draft, or at the trade deadline, maybe even this year to pick something. But I don't even think the Suns know what their offense is going to look like at this point. So once Earl Watson and the Suns group determines that, I think it'll determine what kind of center you need as well.
I understand the argument that you don't need a conventional center, but I think that if you look around some of the better teams in the NBA, talking about the Utah Jazz, for example, you could talk about the Clippers, who everyone loved that we opened up the podcast last week talking about the Clippers. But whether you're talking about Rudy Gobert or a DeAndre Jordan, I do think that there is room in this NBA for a conventional center. I mean, without Rudy Gobert, that Jazz team doesn't win the amount of games it wins this year. I mean, a defensive center like that really changes the trajectory of a team and how you build around them.
I don't disagree, but I wouldn't consider Rudy Gobert a conventional center. When I think conventional center, I think you're talking old school Hakeem and Patrick Ewing and those kind of guys. Andre Drummond's a little bit more in that mold. I'm all for an athletic defensive rim protector in the way of a Rudy Gobert or a DeAndre Jordan, but I think they're the exception. They're not the rule in this league anymore, and when you get one, you're lucky. The Suns do have a conventional center right now in Tyson Chandler. I mean, he's very much your prototypical center. They need to figure out what they want to be And I'm not sure that they know that yet. I didn't see the offense of the future with the Suns last year. I saw Devin Booker shoots a lot, right? You know, and that was a lot of the offense last year. They need to figure out what they want to be and what kind of center fits into that. And who knows, maybe we'll find out this offseason. Maybe they have a guy on their list that they want to pursue. Maybe they extend Alex Len and we realize they think he's the answer. There's a lot of questions that need to be figured out. But I don't think the center one is one we're going to get an answer to this offseason.
Per Hizzle on Reddit asks, where is Bledsoe on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is Bledsoe wanting out of Phoenix for being disregarded, and 10 is he is happy to give the young players more playing time and the Phoenix Suns a higher draft pick?
It's obviously an assumption. You all heard the conversation we had with him a couple weeks ago. I think he's probably about a 6. I think he is accepting of the realities of the situation. I mean, he even admitted it's a tough situation for both sides in terms of what's going on. So I think if he stays here, he's not going to be a malcontent. He's one of the hardest working guys I've ever seen. I think he'll continue to be that, and he'll continue to try to be an all-star and get this team in the playoffs. But I also think he's prepared for the reality that he may not be a Phoenix Sun after this summer, depending on how this draft lottery goes and free agency goes. So I'd probably put it at about a 6.
TomKid88 asks, who is each of your favorite Suns players of all time and on the current roster?
All time, for me, it's got to be Barkley. I feel like if you grew up in the 90s, you were either a Barkley or a KJ guy. And I fell on the Barkley side because when I was young in youth basketball, I played power forward. So I fell in love with Barkley's game. And when you're 10, 9 and 10, when the team makes a run to the finals, a magical run, and the guy wins an MVP, you're skewed by that. So I think Barkley is probably still my all-time favorite guy, so I'd probably rank him one on the current roster. I don't know. There's so many good guys. You gotta love Alan Williams' story. Jared Dudley, there's a nostalgic connection because he's one of the few guys that we remember as a son actually in the playoffs. You all know I have an affinity for Eric Bledsoe. I don't hide that, and I love D Book and his game and the guy himself. So it's like asking me to pick my favorite son, or no pun intended. As a parent, I wouldn't be able to pick my favorite child. So I'd say someone from that group I just listed on the current roster.
So by saying you used to play power forward when you were younger, what you're really saying is you can't shoot worth a lick.
No, I'm saying I was fat as a kid, so you don't put the fat kid at point guard.
For me, my favorite Suns player of all time has got to be Steve Nash. He's the reason why I got into the Phoenix Suns. I started watching basketball when I started watching Steve Nash and going up to Phoenix from Tucson with Ryan Lehmeyer over at a Phenomenon concert. So he got me into the Suns. He got me into Steve Nash. And on the current roster, I got to tell you, man, I really love TJ Warren. I've liked TJ Warren since we drafted him. I've been a little bit disappointed by the injuries, as I'm sure he has too. I thought he took a great leap forward to start the season. Then he had another mysterious head injury. Not another mysterious head injury, but another injury, and it was that mysterious head one that kind of hampered him. But to me, if TJ Warren can, if he can get it going on the defensive end, I think that he adds such a dynamic to the Suns offensively, because it means that you have to guard the Suns all over the court. You can't just guard the around the rim. You can't just guard the three-point line. With TJ Warren on the floor, you have to guard the interior, and I think that just opens things up. And I also think he's one of the few Suns that's really good at cutting, and I think that the Suns need to get some cutters out there, because that offense is stagnant at times, and part of the reason it's stagnant is because no one's cutting to the basket.
Yeah, you definitely need the motion in the offense, and that's a key in today's NBA, and TJ Warren's the kind of guy that can provide that for you.
So thank you, everybody, so much for participating in this mailbag. Don't forget to go over to our Facebook page at Sun Solar Panel, and we post every Friday asking for your mailbag questions, so you can hit us up there. And don't forget also, if you go to sunspodcast.com, that we've got a merch store up. And if you take a picture of you in your solar panel merch gear, we will definitely post it on Twitter. We'll give you a shout out, and we want to see you in it, because some really cool stuff out there.
I just bought my McDonough's 29 other GMs served every draft day shirt. Go and check it out. We're going to have some fun with these shirts. There's a Dragan Bender one coming your way that I think you'll all appreciate. It's a chance to be a little nerdy with your Phoenix Suns fandom and help support the pod. And we always appreciate that. And don't forget, if you do answer questions or ask questions on our Facebook page, you're going to be eligible for that Jason Richardson orange authentic signed jersey out of the prize closet. So get in there and ask your questions.
We are PHX.